It's Sophia with an F, Franklin with the Y, and if you're looking for some bubblegum dum-dum podcast, then you are in the wrong place, baby. Whether I'm reminiscing on the trials and tribulations of working in the corporate world to recapping today's latest reality TV show, you're going to want to pull up a chair and stick around. It's a good time and always 100% unfiltered. Follow and listen to Sophia with an F wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
They have this Panther sound effect that is just the cheesiest, stupidest sounding thing. Big voice guy going, Panther goal scored by Sam Reinhart.
Where'd you get that thing?
I trapped it. Been keeping it in my bathroom at the motel, feeding it old pizza.
It's Mike Shope.
If you're calm, that wondrous big cat will be calm too. But if you're scared, that beautiful death machine will do what God made it to do, namely, eat you with a smile on its face.
And the Bulldog. On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Pick 10 for the Open Championship later today. I'm up. I don't think I'm going to put Padraig Harrington on my list, but, you know, we love to lose. I'll throw 10 bucks on it. Plus 75,000. 10 bucks to win 7,500. If the most dominant senior player who's won that tournament on that golf course were to win, I don't know. I got 10 bucks for that. Just telling you, I'll be fine if I lose the bet to Brian and Bulldog, but win that. That'll be fine. I'll pay him double. How about that? I'll say it now. With me now on the Wester Hotline is a new guest to the show, Ryan Paganetti. Ryan and I have not spoken before other than on Twitter, and I'm excited to welcome him because he speaks my language, and I flatter myself to say that. Football analytics, Ryan was with the Eagles when they won the Super Bowl with Nick Foles, then Jacksonville, and last year Las Vegas. And Ryan, I'm Mike. Thanks for your time today.
I really appreciate you having me.
You're welcome. So you're not with a team now, but you're building a brand, it seems, online. And ever since I heard your name for the first time last week, I think I've seen it a half a dozen more times since already.
Yeah, I really just kind of went down this direction. And, you know, the quality of life of being, you know, part of an NFL organization or coaching staff can be quite extreme. You know, you're talking in times 110-hour weeks. And, you know, if your team's not very good, I unfortunately was part of a team that wasn't particularly good last year. I sort of wanted to give this a route and open things up to sort of consulting opportunities. And I think there was a perspective I had that was a little bit unique. And basically, I just wanted to give it a shot. And so far, there's been a really incredible reception on it so far.
Yes. I heard you first with Scott Barrett on a podcast a week ago, and you were talking about your time with Doug Peterson and the Eagles. Ryan, how did it start for you?
You know, I started out actually in 2015 with the Eagles, and I just, you know, wanted to get my foot in the door. It was great. You know, I was fortunate to get to be able to get in, and I was able to stick around through a head coaching change. And then Doug Peterson sort of put me in a role where he wanted me to really focus on any kind of numbers or stats to help the coaching staff for the Eagles. And it really kind of took off from there. He had an amazing attitude about using the data. The ownership, Jeffrey Lurie, had an amazing attitude. And my, you know, I was doing the game management stuff during the games and communicating when to go for fourth downs and 2-point conversions. Here's what the numbers say. And in that 5-year stretch I was with them, we ended up going for 25% more fourth downs than any other team and 60% more 2-point conversions. We were leading the league in quarterback sneaks and different things like that. And it was an amazing experience. And it was awesome to, you know, be able to win the Super Bowl with those guys. And I was fortunate that the organization entrusted me in a role to kind of be able to contribute there.
And I was so jealous. I think it was a Bill Barnwell piece that year talking about, was it red, yellow, green? Was that it with Frank Reich and Peterson? And maybe I have the year right.
Yeah, so yeah, we were kind of modifying that over time. And I was always trying to frame things in a way that would really sell it a little bit more on the coaches. So there was the ones that were kind of strong go for it versus the ones that were leaning go. And it started out, I wanted to make sure that we were hitting on all the strong go for it. And as time went on and Peterson was more and more confident with the system, it was, you know, more of that with the strong goes, and he would go for the lean go ones as well. And so it's actually a process that a number of teams around the league have kind of tried to emulate over time, and you've seen the fourth down numbers kind of go through the roof around the league.
At that time, in Buffalo, I've been here on the air for more than 25 years, and a lot of those years the Bills were just mediocre. And it always frustrated me that they would, for instance, they would play New England twice a year, but they would play them as if, you know, they expected to win, not looking for any particular edges like this stuff, you know, not – accepting right. the fact that they were underdogs, and they just didn't, they were too proud, I guess. It's not just the Bills. I mean, this is almost all teams. So I begged for a coaching staff, and then you would need ownership probably to come around. And, you know, as you know, this is not, this is percentage. These are percentage plays. It's not just like, you know, Hail Mary stuff. These are percentage plays. So when Philadelphia started to make a name for itself with your involvement, doing it, I was just so excited about it. And the question we would ask is, how do you get the coach to sort of, a former player, right? Like a lot of coaches, how do you get him to sign off? And you're talking about Peterson, like maybe he wasn't that tough a sell.
No, I think what happened is that Jeff, it was clearly organizationally something that Jeffrey Lurie believed in, and a lot of their personnel decisions were sort of instilled on those data-driven principles. Like go look for a time that the Eagles drafted a running back in Jeffrey Lurie's tenure. I don't even think there's a single time. Like examples of these analytics arguments showing up on the personnel side, and they would try to advocate on the coaching side. And I think part of the reason it was a little bit easier with Coach Peterson is he was not a victim of his own success, where you have a lot of these veteran head coach play callers that have already won a ton of games in their career, and they're thinking, why am I going to listen to this nerd telling me I'm screwed up? Like there was this, and he had a fresh mindset on you know, handling these situations, and I think it was really productive, and that I don't think I would have had the same success, and I don't think I would have had anywhere near the same buy-in if I had stepped in with a coach that, say, had been in the league for 15 years as a head coach, and then all of a sudden tried to tell him, hey, there's some data saying that you should try this instead.
Yeah, I'm thinking of his contemporary here at the time with the Bills is Rex Ryan. And we talk to Rex every week, but I don't think there was any getting through to him about this. He knew better. Would you go as far as to say, Ryan, if I may ask, that you think you had a role in convincing Peterson to think like this?
I think so. You know, he was so receptive. And as we sort of talked about what the role of me helping during the game would consist of, he's like, whatever you think is best. And I was really hammering him with all these different charts and tables, and Jeffrey Lurie was seeing the same, you know, items. And I think that combination was like, not only is the person that's writing his check giving him the data, but he's, you know, he's seeing that from analysts. He's asking questions. He's wondering if I can modify this. He wants to know exact details of what assumptions are going into this model that explains this. And I think it allowed him to be very comfortable with it, you know, as opposed to some people, their attitude from the analytics is they just say, just go for it. Well, you have to explain exactly why it says go for it. When does it say not go for it? If you're the worst team in the league, does it still say go for it? If you're the best team in the league, you know, and that attitude, I always felt like I was a baseball catcher, and I was trying to frame it as well as possible so that he would buy in.
Very cool. Ryan Paganetti with me here on the Western Hotline. I'm Mike Shope. Bulldog is off today. Let's talk about the Philly special, the touchdown before the half against New England in the Super Bowl. I'd love to know, like, you're I'm sure you have a detailed memory of it. I just, as somebody that's always harping on this stuff on my show, like Collinsworth in the booth before that play, they're just almost incredulous that this is not going to be a field goal attempt, a chip shot field goal. And what happens, I think you'd also, you know, recognize with announcers, if you fail, they're going to talk about it until the end of time.
Yep.
But if it works, it'll never be mentioned again. Like, it's just next time around, same thing. It's all, why don't you kick? So, I mean, you're not listening to the broadcast at that time, but talk me through sort of like those moments.
Yeah, so what I would say is, you know, we have the exact amount of time remaining effectively and what our timeout situation is, what their timeout situation is. So, you know, leading into a third down call down there, I'm saying, hey, if we get to fourth and two or less, you know, the analytics are going to still say go for it. Fourth and one or less is going to be strong go. And so, you know, we call third down play, and we get to whatever it was, fourth and one and a half or so, and Peterson was going to go for it. And we actually were a little bit, there was like a brief hesitation there, as we sort of tried to pick the optimal play. Like, talk about a high leverage situation. Because in that case, the field position is going to be worthless if we don't get it, because they can basically just kneel out the half. And so it's a little bit different than if that situation comes up in the first quarter and you don't get it, and all of a sudden they're pinned at the one, and you can, you know, it's still an advantage for you for your next drive. So, you know, we were a little bit slow getting a play in. There was a little bit extra thinking. We end up calling a timeout, and Doug's on the sideline calling the plays, and Nick Foles on the on the field. And Foles comes over, and he communicates to Doug, whatever, and we can't hear upstairs what is going on. We had no idea. And all of a sudden he walks back in, and one of our, you know, I think our quarterback coach upstairs asks Coach Peterson, like, what'd you call? And he goes, Philly special. And I just, my heart dropped a little bit, because all I could think about was, these fans are going to blink, because the fans had kind of caught up.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Onto that, I had this role. It had been brought up in the media. They're going to blame me if this does not work. Like, I'm not going to be allowed back in Philadelphia. It's going to say Ryan Paganetti told them to run a trick play and throw it to Foles, and like, some disaster is going to happen. And then I swear, I really thought I was never going to be back allowed in Philadelphia. And obviously, you know, the play worked and everyone talks about it, and they did like a TV special on the play. And, but there was probably a 50% chance that that play could have gone entirely different, and the rest of my life would have gone, you know, played out differently.
I mean, I'm not laughing because you're saying any of that lightly. It's just sort of an amazing story. And sports, whether you're in analytics or a player, I mean, it's just so fickle. So you hit that, right. then you go on and win the game too. It wasn't like the game was over at that point, but what a great story. Part of what you've written and talked about is quarterback sneaks. Now, Philadelphia is famous for the tush push, but we're going back before Jalen Hurts, I think, here. We certainly are if we're going back 10 years. What have you found and been able to execute in NFL front offices in terms of the quarterback sneak? Is it something that might still be something you'd consider underutilized?
I would say in general, yes, it is still underutilized, but the usage has exploded. So in the year 2016, there was less than 70 sneaks in the entire league. And in this last year, there was about 340. It's really incredible when you think about it. But I grew up in Massachusetts. I went to a ton of New England games. I watched them play the Bills, and, you know, unfortunately they beat up on the Bills a number of times. I was always growing up blown away by how more teams were not copying the Patriots. And, you know, Tom didn't have the most, you know, ideal body for quarterback sneaks, but he was leading the league in sneaks almost every single year. And there was a period of time he had double the rest of the league for a decade. And so I spent that 2017 offseason really kind of finding the bottlenecks with each individual coach. Why are we not using this play? Because my first year with Peterson, we ran one or two sneaks the whole year. And some of these concerns that they had, when you actually looked at the data, they say, oh, you can only do it when it's under a yard. You can only do it when there's an open A gap. And when actually testing these things with as much data as possible, and we had to manually tag things and study all these different metrics, it was very clear that teams they should be just sneaking anyways. Like, it doesn't really matter what the defense is. And, some people were concerned about quarterback injuries. The quarterback injury rate was astronomically low on those plays.
Yep.
And we tried to take those variables and think like, okay, let's capitalize on this. And we had a big quarterback. We invested in the line. We had Brandon Brooks and Lane Johnson and, Jason Kelce was like at the record for most sneaks ever now for centers. And they believed in it and they liked it. You know, we started doing it and the fans got involved. And I think we, in that 2017 season, we converted every time. And over time that has evolved into sort of two worlds. There's the normal quarterback sneaks, and then there's these rugby scrum tush push sneaks. And I've mentioned it online. I actually prefer the Buffalo version, where you line up in a semi-believable formation because people are coming up with solutions to stopping these rugby scrum looks. They're like dive bombing really low. They're having these tactical strategies of how they're hitting certain linemen, and there's like an overlap player behind. And there's very few other things that you can do from that alignment. When you're in the Buffalo version, you at least have the upside to run other plays because, you know, they have receivers out there. It looks plausible that they could do something else, even if they end up running sneaks at, you know, one of the league highest rates.
70 quarterback sneaks 10 years ago to over 300. I wonder what percentage of that 300 or 300 plus last year, Ryan, is not even run by quarterbacks. I think of like Mark Andrews running all the Baltimore sneaks, you know, as a tight end, and other teams, maybe even Goddard once or twice. I know they have Hurts, but, you know, it's why not?
I'll give you a number. There was 46 non-quarterback sneaks, non-quarterback, but yes, sneaks last year, which was the most I've ever seen. You know, Seattle won the Super Bowl. It didn't come up in the Super Bowl. They had been doing it with the tight end. So a few different teams decided that either from a quarterback health standpoint or just from a preference standpoint that they were going to go down that route. I'd say for a team like Buffalo, they don't necessarily need to do that because Josh is so good at them, and yeah, he almost has the body of a tight end.
Now, you have pointed out that there is an element of predictability, which might be putting it mildly, to the Bills' sneak attack, so to speak.
Yes. So, you know, obviously there was that unbelievably unfortunate situation for Bills fans where they lost the AFC Championship game. They actually had four sneaks stopped in the game. There was three of them on offense, defense, and then one was a two-point conversion when Josh basically threw it to, like, Curtis Samuel or somebody after he wasn't going to get it. So they really lost. He failed on four of them. But, you know, after the game, the Chiefs, one of the Chiefs players mentioned they had a 10-for-10 streak going to the left. And I watched every sneak every week in my time in the NFL, and I knew that number was way more than 10. So this last couple of weeks, I actually went through, and from 2022, about week 10, through this last, you know, through the AFC, up until the AFC Championship game, they had run left 70 consecutive times on their sneaks, which is almost unbelievably incomprehensible. However, they were excellent doing so. So, like, I think, and then going into that game, the Chiefs had failed to stop 32 consecutive quarterback sneaks. So I totally understand the approach and the attitude. Now, the Chiefs did an amazing job game plan-wise. They clearly knew it was going left. They did some interesting things. They had an extra defensive lineman over there at times. The off-ball players would immediately start running left. You know, that I honestly think that last quarterback sneak that Josh got, quote-unquote, stopped on, yeah, I really think he converted it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's unbelievable to think. He converts that, I think they're more than likely to win that game in terms of from that moment on, and then they're more than likely to be favored in the Super Bowl. And, you know, I know Bills fans maybe don't want to hear that because it's, like, painful, but it just shows you the margins of how close these things are.
Right.
And, you know, since then, Buffalo, obviously, they're aware of the situation. They have some other versions here. They're not going to go left every single time. But from my understanding, part of that left tendency was basically the right-handed nature of the center was that he's using his right hand to snap it, so having his left arm immediately available makes it so that it was easier for him to basically go left and either block a left A-gap defender or on the nose tackle. They would double-team the nose tackle with the right guard and the left and the center, so he would take the left part of that nose tackle and the right guard would take the right part of his body part. And that, I think, was I kind of an under-discussed part of that. I've talked to a couple of different centers who at least believe that's the case.
Interesting. Ryan, so much good information here. I know you've recently unearthed stats about whether coordinators should be on the field or in the booth or play callers, either side of the ball. Let's spend a minute on that. I mean, it sounds like or reads like just a ton of time went into being able to, you know, use all these examples and come up with some interesting information.
Yeah, so I had somebody who's got a really huge following on social media bring up the question, and a bunch of people tagged me, and they said, you know, Ryan Pagnetti needs to look into this, and I kind of tried to do a deep dive, and to the best of my ability, I attempted to assess where the play caller was, and I think that I think by the end of it, I had 20 years, and I felt about 99% good of the ones that I had. There were some that were a little bit of a mystery, but the interesting kind of nuance was there seemed to be a boost, even if you remove play calling head coaches, for the play caller to be on the sideline. And I think part of that, just from being in coaching booths for a long time, is the discussions that can take place between the head coach and the quarterback, the play caller, the head coach, the quarterback, the offensive line, all these different parties on the sideline. It's a real big hassle for the play calling offensive coordinator to speak to the quarterback between drives when he's upstairs. You have to basically use a phone, and it's like very cumbersome, and it's like you're living in the Stone Age to do so. And I think that could be kind of a key layer there. Now, the margin is quite small, and there's some coordinators that clearly prefer being up or down. And I think, like, you know, it doesn't really matter where you are, you know, if you clearly have a preference. But it was some interesting data regardless that I thought was, you know, the type of thing that I'm hoping to bring the fans that, you know, people will find engaging.
Very cool. Just a couple minutes left here with you, Ryan. What's next in this world with all the transformation teams figuring it out when it comes to fourth down and two-point plays? Not everybody's there on the down eight, go for two stuff yet. I mean, we're not quite
right.
It's not unanimous yet. It still baffles the likes of Troy Aikman, which I find hilarious. Why would they do that? You know what? Open one book and find out. Sorry, getting on a tangent here. But what are a couple things maybe where teams haven't figured out yet that there's an edge, if you know?
I think, you know, you still run into some scenarios where these teams are getting a little too drop-back heavy, particularly early on in the games. And for everyone who talks about run-pass balance, I think there's even more importance to play action and run balance. Like it's very highly correlated that the teams that are running a lot of play action are having, you know, more success both on those play action passes, and it gives a little bit of a boost to your run game because every time that there's a mesh with the running back, these defenses have to respect it more. If 80% of the time that there's a mesh with the running back, the ball's being handed off, like that, you know, you get linebackers and second level defenders being able to play downhill more. I think that's going to be a narrative that it continues to exist. Clint Kubiak just won the Super Bowl. They were a heavy play action team. Sean McVay is a heavy play action team. I think it's going to be something that people keep an eye on. The other one that's just totally, it's insane is the long field goal attempts ever since they changed the K-balls. So they changed the K-ball process this past year. It allowed the teams to work on the ball a lot more. Mm-hmm. And you saw 74 55-plus yard field goals. The previous year was something like 54. And it wasn't just 55 pluses. You know, I was on the wrong side of it. You know, I know Cam Little well. I actually worked with him. But Cam Little set the all-time NFL record against the Raiders before halftime. He went 68 yards. And these numbers are, like, insane. You know, if you said this to somebody 15 years ago, they're like, what are you talking about? Did they just allow steroids? Like, it's unbelievable. But the number that kind of shocked some people is that in the year 2000, there was one total 55-plus yard field goal in the entire NFL. This last year, 74. And so you start, it's just really, it's just wild. And you're talking, you have to handle your end of half and end of game situations significantly different because you're the Bills in the playoffs. You're playing Cam Little and the Jaguars, and Bills fans are sweating. If these guys get to the 50, this game might go to overtime. Like, that is like a legitimate concern. You know, I don't remember whether the score was three-point margin or four-point margin at the time, I forget. But that's just like an example of the considerations you have to make that really weren't a thing even a couple of years ago.
Sure, consider that, plus what they've done with touchbacks, trying to find the happy medium there, and it can be like two good plays put you in field goal range from a touchback.
Right, right.
Love the point about play action. When Brian Daboll was here, he got a lot of credit for that. Play action in motion all the time, and like cheat codes, you know? And I remember too, and I really liked Micah Hyde, the Bills safety, who was on with us, I think maybe for 2 years every week, at least one. And I was so immersed in all of that, that one time I brought up to him, hey, Micah, have you ever sort of read anything on or heard any coach talk about how like play action from an offense, really just there's no reason not to do it? And he's like, come on, no. Of course not. Don't be stupid, you know, like that. But, you know, it seems like an automatic win on any given play for an offense. Maybe you can't always do it. I don't know. But why not? What's it costing you to run somebody across the box? All right. Anyway, Ryan, I've really enjoyed this. It's good to know you, and I'll be reading your work for sure.
Yeah, I'd say for sure it's an exciting time for Bills fans. You know, the team's a great team. Every year they're contenders. I'm a believer in Joe Brady. I think he's got an exceptional offensive scheme. I've long thought that Jim Leonard is an incredibly intriguing defensive coordinator because his production in college in particular was really, really strong. So I'll be keeping an eye on their team. And obviously, you know, I think at some point here soon, they're going to finally break through.
Very good. Well, again, I'll be following you. If I can do anything for you, let me know.
Thank you.
Ryan Paganetti, my guest here on the Wester Hotline, talking about some fun last decade or so history with football analytics. The field goal point is interesting. The sneaks, can you believe that? That the Bills ran 70 consecutive quarterback sneaks to the left side in a span of 2.5 seasons. Did you even notice it until I didn't, until the Chiefs called them out on it after beating them? I never noticed it. So there's always the next thing. Any of that of interest to you? 803-0550, we can talk some more about it. England takes the lead over Argentina at the World Cup. 65th minute, England looking to get to the final, 1-0. I'm Mike Shope, and this is WGR.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.